Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm so excited to be here with all of you this morning. I have a great show planned. Galen Fuwa will be my guest today. He is the founder of Restore Food, and I will be inviting him on in a little bit to tell us more about the work of Restore Food and his personal journey. But before we do, of course, I want to talk to you about some things going on in the news and share some events coming up and, of course, my weekly recipe. So first off, there's been so much information in the news, and starting with Earth Day, trying to raise awareness about plastic use and water pollution and how much plastic is in our waters. Well, this week there was a great article that came out, and Erica Serino from Stony Brook, who's been working with a lot of these environmentally ocean explorations. She was on PBS this week talking about the pollution that comes from sunscreens in the water. And it's a huge problem, and it's a problem that many of us don't think about, myself included. And of course, I'm very aware of the plastics in the water. But sunscreen, I've talked about often with all of you in regards to how much of the chemicals that are in sunscreen is absorbed into our bodies through our skin. But I haven't really talked about how much of that sunscreen ends up in the oceans. And, you know, there's been some unbelievable research done recently about the effects that sunscreen is having on our coral zones, and it's really devastating the coral life, and it's something we really need to think about. You know, there was a study done in Hawaii where they found that 2,600 average daily visitors to this one beach left about 412 pounds of sunscreen in the ocean. And the damage that that's having on the ocean is just huge. And so I want to urge everybody, again, when you're thinking of putting sunscreen on, first off, there's a couple things you can do. One, you can be under an umbrella and, you know, not put sunscreen on. You can also, you know, if you're snorkeling in the ocean, you know, wear something with long sleeves and cover your back so that you're not exposing your skin. But if you are going to use sunscreen, you know, use ones that are high in zinc oxide as opposed to the chemicals that block the sun rays, which are what's devastating the oceans. And it's also better for your health. And really think about what kind of sunscreen you put on your children. I know we all want to protect our kids from the sun. However, the chemicals that you're putting on their skin is readily absorbed into their bodies and creating damage, hormonal damage, and all kinds of endocrine upsetters, et cetera. So do think about that. And the Environmental Working Group has a great list of acceptable and better choices when it comes to sunscreen. So check that out at ewg.org. Also, I have, you know, some great articles in this week's newsletter on my website in the blog about these reports that I'm talking about. And tonight there's actually a meeting about the Sawkill Watershed. And the Sawkill Watershed is a 14-mile-long tributary of the Hudson River down in Brooklyn. And it is, you know, really at risk of affecting our drinking water and the water quality for all of us that live in that area. And so there's a big meeting tonight to come out to become involved in the Sawkill Watershed community. And it's taking place tonight from 6:30 to 9 in Red Hook at the Town Hall. And you can find out more information about that on my website. But they're really trying to clean up the watershed area. Dan Shapley from Riverkeeper will be there talking about the water quality program that he's involved in, and find out about next steps and what you can do to help protect this watershed. Also, tonight there is a screening of Chasing Coral, which is taking place at Sustainable Malloy's Suffolk County campus out in Farmingdale. And it starts at 6 o'clock with a vegan dinner and followed by the screening of Chasing Coral. And this is all about the coral reefs, exactly what I'm talking about. So I know, as someone who loves snorkeling, and I've been snorkeling for over 30 years, the change is dramatic. I mean, when I first started snorkeling, I remember being blown away by the unbelievable colors. And now when I go snorkeling, it's so sad and it's boring. It's not, the coral, half of it's dead. It's not the same kind of colors that they used to be. So that we really have a problem on our hands. So if you are available tonight, this is a screening film that you really want to check out. Other things coming up. A Mother's Day brunch. This weekend is Mother's Day, so happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. If you're interested, the Queen's Botanical Gardens is having a farm-to-table brunch that is reasonably priced and includes admission into the gardens, so you might want to check that out. Last year, I went to one up at Wave Hill up in northern Manhattan, and it was wonderful. That one sold out, but this one, Queens Botanical Gardens, I think still has room, and there's two seatings at 10 and at 1. So check that out. Some other great things going on starting next weekend, May 19th, Brooklyn Grange, but their Long Island City rooftop garden. They start their open house season, so starting next Saturday, May 19th, and then every Saturday throughout until October. For free, you can go to the farm and see the chickens they have on the rooftop and the produce and gardening that they're doing. It's from 11 to 4, and there's no registration required, so check that out. The Vegetarian Food Festival is coming up May 19th and 20th, and that is at the Metropolitan Pavilion. So that's always a fun event. There's lots of, chef demos, speakers, kids' activities, stage presentations, entertainment, and lots of samples of really good food. So check that out. Ellen Kamai, who is also a host on the Progressive Radio Network and a very dear colleague, friend of mine, she is hosting many, many different events coming up. This next weekend is the first one on May 20th. She has a Chinatown Herb Walk, and she does this twice a year, usually in the spring and in the fall. And she takes a group of people down to Chinatown with her her colleague, Dr. Z, and they explore Chinatown from a whole new perspective. And you'll learn a lot about the herbal medicine that is used in Chinese culture, herbal remedies. And Ellen is just a wealth of information. So if you're interested in the Chinatown Herb Walk, you can register. I have a link on my website, or you can go to the Natural Nurse's website and find out more information about that. She also has an herbal certification course coming up on June 9th. This is actually part 4 of her herbal certification course, but it's an online course that you can sign up for and take in different order. You don't have to go consecutively. And this one is Feeling the Consciousness of Plants, and it's on June 3rd. She is also hosting an herbal and medicinal walk at Restoration Farm on June 9th. And Restoration Farm is a wonderful organic CSA farm here in Nassau County, one of the few farms that we really have in Nassau County. And they provide beautiful, beautiful vegetables, and they have a farm stand every week as well as their CSA membership. So check them out. If you have not joined a CSA yet, and you don't know what that is, please reach out to me. I'd be happy to fill you in. But it's a community-supported agricultural system where you purchase a share ahead of the season so that the farmer has money to work with, and then every week you get a box full of what has been harvested that week. It's a great way to eat well, have local seasonal vegetables every week, and it supports people doing it the right way. So that's a wonderful thing. Otherwise, find your local farmers markets. They're all starting to open up as the vegetables start coming in. It's still a little early, but they will be opening soon. Also going on, the Great Fish Count with the Bronx River Alliance is taking place at Concrete Plant Park in the Bronx on June 2nd. That should be a great event to check out as well. And Slow Food Nations is coming up again. It's a ways away, starting July 14th, but it's a full weekend, starting the 13th, if you want to come on Friday, through the 15th in Denver, Colorado. Tickets right now are really reasonable, so if you're interested in taking a trip this summer, check out Denver. They're a real food hub, and this slow food event is really wonderful. It brings people together involved with the slow food movement from all around the country and internationally, meeting in Denver, and there's loads of discussion events, workshops, speakers, food tastings, lots of things going on. A lot of it is free. Some of it you have to purchase tickets to, but really worth the trip. I went out last year, and I'm planning on going again this year. So check that out. The Queens Botanical Garden is also having a farm and compost tour on July 21st. I know some of these things seem far away, but they do sell out, so you do want to check those out. And I have a list of lots of other events on my website. I don't want to take the time to go into them all now, but you do want to check them out because there's lots of wonderful things going on that you want to participate in. But I want to invite my guest on, and I want to share my recipe first. So this week's recipe was actually inspired by my guest last week. Chad Sarnow was my guest, and he is one of the founders of Wicked Healthy, and they came out with a new book that was released last week called The Wicked Healthy Cookbook. And in that book, they do a lot of cooking with mushrooms. And the book, I have to tell you, it's a great cookbook, really inspiring. But one method that I actually was not familiar with was a way that they press the mushrooms down. And I've been cooking portobello mushroom steaks for years, and I always press them down with my spatula, you know, on both sides and try to get the water out, but I've never pressed them to the extent that they talk about pressing. They actually place a cast iron pan on top of the portobello mushrooms or oyster mushrooms or whatever kind of mushrooms you're cooking, and you press them down with a heavy weight on top for 3 to 5 minutes, then you turn them over and do the same on that side, and then you turn it over again. You do that back and forth like four times, and you end up with a really mushroom that where the texture has totally been changed and transformed to be really solid and meaty-like. And I made these portobello steak sandwiches that were just unbelievable. And I've made these barbecued portobello mushroom sandwiches before, but never with pressing the mushrooms down like I did this time, and it really was a game changer. So I made 3 sandwiches using 5 portobello mushrooms, but I probably could have gotten 4 sandwiches out of it, so it's up to you. But I started with 5 portobello mushrooms. That was the amount that fit comfortably in my on my cast iron griddle. And then you want a little olive oil to cook them in, or whatever oil you like to use. Then you're going to sprinkle them with some seasonings. I used garlic powder, smoky paprika powder, dried mustard powder, chili powder, salt and pepper. I used a cup of my homemade barbecue sauce, and I have a recipe for the homemade barbecue sauce on my website. But you can also use your favorite jarred barbecue sauce. So I'm not going to share the barbecue sauce recipe with you now because that's more involved. But you can use your favorite barbecue sauce or make my homemade one, which you can get at the IE Green website. Then I also put some pickles on top, some vegan mayo, some roasted red peppers, some arugula, and some peppercini pickles. I preheated the oven to 400 degrees. And so I started by preparing the mushrooms. I sautéed them on the hot griddle in a little bit of olive oil. I first put the caps face down, and then I put a heavy cast iron pan on top. And I let that cook undisturbed for 3 minutes or so. Check it to make sure it's not burning. After 3 to 4 minutes, you're going to turn them over and adjust the heat, so it doesn't burn. And then once you turn it over, you're going to sprinkle the face upside now with the garlic powder and the smoky paprika, the dried mustard powder, the chili powder, and some salt and pepper. and then put the weights down on it again and let that side really get pressed and weighted down. And cook that side for 3 or 4 minutes. Then turn them over again and now sprinkle that the other side with the herbs or the spices. And then press it down again. And then just keep repeating, pressing and pressing and turning each time until you've been doing it for like 20 minutes or so. So it's really, really, really pressed. And the portobello mushrooms become thin where they started off, you know, maybe almost an inch thick. They're now down to a quarter inch thick. Then you're going to pull them off of the pan and you're going to marinate them in the barbecue sauce for about a half an hour or so. You can even marinate them overnight if you wanted to, you know, do this in two steps and just set it up and be ready for the next day. And then you can either cook it on the grill or in the oven. I was not turning my grill on yet. I haven't yet tried my grill. I need to get to it, but so I did it in the oven. And I baked it in the marinade. And actually, I didn't put a lot of marinade on it. At that point, I took it out and I put it into a Pyrex pan and just had enough barbecue sauce on the bottom and the top to keep it from sticking in the pan. Cooked it, and when that started to caramelize, I basted it with some more barbecue sauce. And every 10 minutes or so, I put some more barbecue sauce on and cooked it at a 400-degree oven for about another half an hour, basting every 10 minutes with more barbecue sauce on both sides. And then I removed it, and it was just so caramelized and delicious. It was just really great. And then I made a sandwich. I toasted a baguette in the oven. I put some Just Mayo on it, which is a really great vegan mayonnaise. I put some roasted red pepper on it, some pickles, the portobello mushrooms, which I actually sliced up a little bit just to make it easier to bite into. And some arugula, and that was it. And they just were delicious, really, really a game changer. So I recommend that to everybody. When you make this recipe, please send me an email. Let me know how you liked it. It was really wonderful. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you my guest today. Galen Fola is the founder of Restore Food, and Restore Food is organization or company based on the principle that food is medicine and promotes healthy eating, healthy cooking, mindful food selections, and empowers people to make better personalized food choices. And I'm going to let Galen tell us more about that. Galen, are you with me?
I am. Good morning, Bhavani. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. Thank you for joining me. You've been traveling a bit, huh?
I have, and I really appreciate the fact that you led off with your mentioning of saving the coral reef, because I was in Hawaii for 10 days and did a bit of snorkeling myself, and it was pretty enlightening and awakening to be there and realize how much of a priority it is for them to be marketing these reef-safe sunscreens, because to protect those amazing environments, it was pretty important purchase. Awareness that we can all buy into.
Yeah, we really need to raise the awareness of so many things, and this is just one of the very important things that hasn't been in the news. I mean, like we've been hearing so much about the plastics in the water and, you know, reducing our plastic intake, et cetera, which is all very important as well, but no one thinks about the sunscreen in the water. I've been talking about sunscreen on our skins because of toxicity to our own person, but not to the ocean. And that was just a mind-blowing reality check. And it was just like, oh my God, how did I not think of that before? So I'm glad people are making the connection there as well. So can you share with us a little bit about your journey? What brought your attention to food as medicine?
Sure. So my whole experience tied to food really started as when I was a kid. I used to actually bake and cook a bit with my mother, starting basically when I was around 6 or 7. And just growing up, having some of those opportunities, jumping in whatever time
and
opportunity. I grew up in Litchfield County up in Connecticut, a small town, Washington, Connecticut. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I grew up there, and so food has kind of always been especially home cooked meals has always been a priority for me throughout my life. Realizing what the quality standards can be and the fun that you can have in making your own meals and doing it as a family or even for yourself. So that was the original influences of food in general. But then unfortunately, my mother actually contracted breast cancer when I was a freshman in high school. And through that journey, we all as a family just kind of really woke up to, you know, what we could all be doing to help her support her journey and trying to fight off the cancer and even the effects of like chemotherapy that she was going through. Unfortunately, she did end up passing away, but it was a really important journey for me, just in kind of going through those investigative searches, opportunities, working, listening to doctors and other wellness practitioners that my parents were having conversations with. And food became such an important element in it all, and making proper food decisions, finding, you know, good sources of foods that we were going to be preparing for her. Because obviously, even at that point, it becomes almost like a medical grade food selection process. But just, you know, from there, that just kind of introduced me to, what impact food can have on our health, and literally the policy or philosophy that everything that we put into our mouth can impact our daily lives at such a deep level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes the struggles that we have end up being blessings, and, you know, I'm sorry for the loss of your mother, of course, but, you know, how fortunate to be young and be aware of food as medicine and how it can affect your life. So in that journey, how has your view on food and the health industries and food corporations, how have you made that connection? How have they compromised our well-being in exchange for profit?
Yeah, so I mean, this is really just looking back and kind of digging deeper into, what food choices we have had leading up until, you know, really within the last on a greater scale within the last 5 to 10 years, really. Supermarkets through the 70s, 80s, 90s, for quite a long time, they were the stronghold of where everyone got their food. And then people started to wake up to the actual quality of food that was being sold in these places, and searching out other opportunities and resources, knowing that what they were providing was not allowing people to maintain a healthy lifestyle. That's the supermarkets is just one example. Obviously, you have the pharmaceutical industry, which everyone is quite well aware of at this point, of the of their strategies and potential disregard for our health in many cases. You know, I'm not here to dismiss Western medicine and pharmaceuticals as a whole, because certainly they do play a role, but obviously, there are epidemics that have arisen and abuses that have arisen. And, food, making better food choices obviously can prevent us from having to go down that path as a whole if we're able to maintain our health in general. So, you know, it's basically voting with our dollars and spending with our dollars where we want our values to be driven, and what we want our values to be driven by. And so the food industry, buying organic, knowing where things are coming from and if it's grown in a sustainable environment or even fair trade for that matter. So obviously where we spend our money is what's going to get supported. And if we do that as a collective, it can really help drive change and pull, smaller growers, smaller artisanal food providers into markets that typically without prior influence or dollars being spent with them, they wouldn't have had access to. And that's one of the big philosophies that I really believe in. I mean, we have to kind of band together and it's radio shows like you and your audiences that, you know, driving a collective message and people joining in communities at all the events that you listed off. We get together at places like that and share not only the joy and good food, but start sharing our opinions and, you know, other sources. And that just starts to, the trickle effect of gathering and building this community can really be successful through actions like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the current state of the food industry, and in particular people's awareness of food as medicine, as that changes, how do you see that changing the food industry itself?
Well, I mean, again, it really does come down to where we spend our money. But one of my strongest beliefs in how we can start to understand what our body needs is this whole philosophy of personalized nutrition. And that's a journey, a major journey in and of itself. I mean, obviously everyone's busy. We want to find, we're getting stressed out about making these healthy food choices and where we're going to find the, you know, fresh vegetables, like you were talking about, CSAs are great sources. But then we have to potentially bring it back to our homes and prepare it ourselves. Some of us don't necessarily trust our culinary skills. So it can become quite stressful. And so we have to, the more we can understand about our individual bodies and what our current state of health is, the better off we can start making better decisions about what foods we're eating. And so that becomes really trying to find sources, find people, and build a team, which is the type of environment that I like to work in, especially with my clients, is working with other wellness practitioners, even your Western physician, to triangulate and build a plan to help you recover from your current state of, if you have any type of illness, or if you're in particular just trying to prevent illness from coming on. Mm-hmm. So that's really how I like to look at it. This whole idea of personalized nutrition, I think, is still catching hold. The technology industry has really started to embrace it and try to figure things out. Which is great, but there's still a long ways to go. And obviously the body is so dynamic that it can be a moving target. But it's really, you just have to kind of take the plunge into the deep end and start to navigate, have conversations with wellness practitioners that deal specifically with nutrition, but also with the rest of your body, so that you can help you figure it out. And the other thing is, like, with the advent of, you know, acupuncturists and Eastern medicine taking a stronger and stronger foothold in our wellness industry, you know, there's a lot of people out there that can help you along the way. So just reach out to any of these types of practitioners and just start to have conversations, and those obviously that, you know, that you start to build trust with and build a relationship with and can find success with. And that's kind of the way of evolution, right? It's mm-hmm. you start finding your way through investigation.
Now, you specialize in personalized nutrition. How do you do that? Do you use technology to come up with this personalized profile for an individual, or can you explain that to us a little bit? How does that work, personalized nutrition? Because, I mean, everyone is so confused out there when I talk to people of all the different options from paleo right. to vegan to plant-based to macrobiotic. You know, there's so many different ways to go, and different diets work better for some than others. And, you know, how do people find out what's good for them?
Right. So this is exactly why, one of the reasons why I chose to head into working with food as medicine in general. I was working in the online media space for startup technology companies. And in that space, you know, through advertising campaigns online, we were leveraging various large data sets. And so I wasn't necessarily enjoying working in the advertising industry, and I wanted to shift into something that I felt more personally and passionately aligned with. But seeing how those how data was being used to deliver more personalized advertising campaigns, I was like, well, why can't this be done for food? And so I started asking questions and looking around and seeing who was in this space. And thankfully, I've been out of that for 5 or 6 years now. And thankfully, there are a number of companies that have headed down this path because they realize what the opportunities are. But personalized nutrition really comes into technology in particular, can help us understand through like even blood testing or you know, just monitoring our heart rates. Like, I mean, even these, you know, like iPhones and iWatches. I mean, we're able to see like what our standing heart rates are through exercise, what our heart rates can reach. And so monitoring this basic physical activity and measurements can help us understand from a caloric intake perspective, you know, what our body needs. And so I believe in the fact that each of our bodies is obviously different. And so there is no one particular diet that's going to work for all of us. I mean, there are some diets that have worked for, you know, thousands of people, but plenty of them have failed. And, you know, people go out and they're spending millions, billions of dollars every year over year, to try to figure this out. And because it is a huge problem, I mean, self-confidence, medical bills, whatever it is, there's a wide spectrum that people have tried to, by prescribing these blanket diets, tried to solve. But ultimately, for a lot of people, it just becomes very confusing. And so what I'm working on through technology, but also just through this whole triangulation perspective of working with other wellness practitioners, is to help isolate, to come up with the right testing methodologies, to come up with the baselines of you know, where the person is in their life, in their current state of health, if they are dealing with illness, and then start to really target particular areas by coming up for myself, by working with them to come up with particular recipes, to come up with particular foods. And even in some cases, like if there's a particular food that I recognize, or, you know, the team, as I say, is recognizes that the person would be ideally be recommended to start ingesting, that could really help them, but it doesn't necessarily suit their taste profile, then somehow it's just to try to like break down the neurogastronomic connection between what the food flavor profile is and their reaction, and try to get people to understand that just because that reaction is there, it's more of like a brain response to what the food is. But you can ultimately, and ideally, especially if your health is on the line, try to train your brain to like something, or at least even just get over that that initial reaction of distaste.
Can you so share with us an example of something like that you are thinking of?
Well, I mean, I guess without, not necessarily a specific example, but I think the whole neurogastronomic idea is a field that I've spent a fair amount of time in researching. And the understanding of our taste and smell receptors is pretty fascinating. And it really helps us identify with food emotionally. And so the concept of, you know, when we take a breath, like you have a food that comes in front of you, or, you know, if it's fresh or cooked, and you take that first inhalation, you know, you breathe in. But the inhalation is actually not where we recognize the food. There's actually a millisecond where the breath starts to exhale. And on that very brief exhalation, it hits our palate, basically, in the back of our mouth, and sends these messages to our brain about how we associate with it. And so, you know, some people who are hooked on sweets or not, I mean, that it depends on how those messages are received and what our brain tells us, whether we like or dislike that throughout our body. And so from there, it becomes our emotional association, whether we find something uplifting or not so uplifting. That's a cascade of food decisions that can work for us or against us over time. So it's a really interesting science and understanding how we react to foods as a whole and smells. And by recognizing that, then you can start to understand which foods you're attracted to. And then you start to go deeper into your own body and start to understand what it is that's driving your body. You start to recognize, am I being more attracted to sugars and sweets, or am I more attracted to fresh greens and vegetables? And from there, you can start to really pay attention and start to navigate down this path of hopefully trying to make better decisions for overall.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Sounds, I'm curious to hear more about how you come up with that. But before we do, let's take a couple-minute break. And when we come back, I want to delve more into that personalized nutrition that you're working with. Everyone, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Galen Fula. How do you pronounce your last name? I'm sorry.
You're very close. It's Fula. Fula.
Fula. Fula. So the L is not pronounced. Galen Fula. He's the founder of Restore Food. And I'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
The Progressive Radio Network is a thinking person's network for our world's progressive visionaries and stakeholders and great thinkers to assemble on a commercial, free, and listener-supported network. Our provocative hosts speak freely and passionately on intriguing and urgent topics such as health and news and politics and women's issues and philosophy and more that directly impact our lives. Progressive Radio Network takes chances. Our voices and ideas are not always welcomed by corporate media, so Progressive Radio Network is a very important outlet for these great thinkers.
Coalition, and our show is titled What in the Cell is Going On. We will be revealing how vaccine toxins damage our cells, how to allow the body to heal itself, and how to protect yourselves from the drug company's agenda. Join us every Monday at 2 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM, to learn all you need to set yourselves free from the medical, military, and industrial cartel.
New to crypto? Curious? Interested in learning more? Or are you a seasoned investor who wants to find new and ever-evolving crypto investments? No matter what level you are, we want to keep you informed. Join us on coffeetalk.co, Let's Talk Crypto, Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on PRN.FM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Galen Fula. He's the founder of Restore Food. And we're talking about personalized nutrition and how he works with his clients. So, Galen, when you talk about personalized nutrition and you talk about how people have that initial reaction, what do you do to change that initial reaction if it's negative, if this is something that you and their practitioners have determined is good for them to eat?
Yeah, I mean, so in cases when I work with my clients, I mean, if there's a strong deterrent to a particular food, then you can't just force them to like something that they don't. It's more, I think, what I try to do is I try to work within a spectrum of food that they that they do enjoy, because you don't want to make, especially if someone's already ill and you're trying to work with them to overcome something, you can't force feed them necessarily. So it's more about kind of, you know, working with them to help support their mind and their body to be acceptable and open to change.
I would think also trying to find the flavor palettes that they do like, and then trying to create those food, use those foods with the flavor palettes that they do like, and incorporate them that way.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. And so, I mean, especially, and this is the trust thing, you know, that it, especially for me, sometimes I'm going into my clients' homes to cook for them. But, you know, most of the time what I try to do is empower my clients to learn how to cook and prepare and make food choices on their own. So that's really most of what I'm rooted in the hands-on, like one-to-one side of what I do. But, you know, the personalized aspect of it is really rooted in working with, you know, the other wellness practitioners, medical doctors, looking at blood tests, and any other tests that are available, results that are available, and really doing a deeper assessment of the patient, the client, to understand really what's going on. And then I start to, based on those conditions, I start to associate specific healing elements of particular foods to whatever is going on with the person. And so it's really just a syncing up of the current state of their well-being, and then using the healing powers of foods to drive change and hopefully bring them back to a better state of health. So, mm-hmm.
And do you use any type of algorithm or any type of technology to establish, you know, what would be good for them?
I'm not actually deploying that right now. That is something that I'm working on in the background to come up with a platform and set of algorithms that can actually do that. But that's a major undertaking.
I would think so. Yeah.
But there are a number of companies. Not a number. I mean, there are really like a handful of companies that are. That are also in the space, and you know they're all still very much in testing mode, working with establishing the technology platform itself. But then one of the biggest questions that you have in being able to control this is the controlled environment, and it can, when you're trying to really measure the effects of a personalized nutrition program, and especially building in a technology platform, there's so many variables, because if someone's at home and they're buying a random set of olive oil, for that matter, that you don't know where it was made or the quality of it, over the course of time, those particular food choices, if the food choices aren't controlled, then you know the accuracy of the testing and the program itself can be thrown out of the window. So there are a number of variables and deterrents to whether a personalized nutrition technology platform can succeed. I'm obviously bullish on the fact that they will over time, but it's going to take time. It's going to take time and for technology developers, app developers to coordinate with growers, the food industry itself, and so this is really the future of food, and food as medicine, for that matter. Mm-hmm. And why it's so important for us to be supportive of organic growers, because or health supportive doctors, and also these tech and app developers, to be spending our dollars so that they have budgets to do this research with our best interest in mind. That's where this thing can all work together, and we can all work together to really drive this change. Because, I mean, without volunteering ourselves and allowing ourselves to work with the technologies and with people like myself and other people who are interested in this, you know, the change will obviously take longer to occur. And I'm just passionate about this so much that, you know, realizing that there are opportunities to help ourselves understand our own bodies and what role food in particular can play in it. It's just we can really take our health into our own hands, and that's really exciting to me. I mean, when we start to really understand what foods empower ourselves, our own individual body, our own genetic makeup, and start to really influence that genetic signaling with greater confidence, and know that over time, like working with health practitioners, that we can monitor that via the use of technology, that becomes a really exciting opportunity.
Right. Now, I'm sure I have listeners out there going, yeah, nice if my insurance covered it. And as we know, insurance doesn't usually cover a lot of the specialty doctors that I know I personally like to go to, acupuncturists, chiropractors, nutritionists, massage therapists, all those things that would be good for one's health. Do you have suggestions for your clients to try to get
this is it's obviously a big hurdle to try to jump over, because the insurance companies are so deeply rooted in their establishment. But I think the best thing that we can do is truly like power of our voice. You know, whether it be through your employer or if you have your own private personal health insurance program, is to reach out to them. And I'm a believer, especially in this day and age, that we by the power of numbers we can shift change. I mean, you do see it. There are some insurance companies that have shifted, and even corporate health programs are shifting in some cases to realizing that healthier workers who are even they're being promoted to take some time off and come back to work being energized and motivated is better than just running people into the ground and forcing us to come to work every day and feel exhausted and stressed out. I mean, it turns out that there's research that's showing up that shows that that's absolutely counterproductive. So, it's a really power of voice thing at this. If your insurance company or if you're not able to afford it, but then also, again, like I said earlier, is if money is an obstacle, state that, but that shouldn't deter you from reaching out to some of these practitioners, because plenty of them are compassionate and want to try to work with you. And if they can't, if they don't have time or whatever the reason is, then hopefully they can, point you in the direction of someone else or some other resource that can be of help and help you along your way.
Mm-hmm. And do you use meditation at all in assisting your clients to make better choices?
I think meditation is an absolutely powerful way of looking inside of ourselves, understanding what's going on, seeing, feeling what our stress levels are, how meditation can help us to lower those stress levels just by the power of sitting, but also listening to our body. By understanding, going inside, we can feel, we can help determine what state our body is in, and even then start to make decisions on which foods at which time throughout the day, like when you're hungry or when you feel like you need a cup of tea or when you feel like you might need a salad. I mean, your body sends you all these signals, and the more we're in tune with those signals, the smarter we can be about the foods that we're buying and when we're going to eat and what we're going to eat. Meditation is extremely powerful. There's a lot more research that's showing up about the healing effects of meditation. So if you haven't started, or if you're a seasoned meditative practitioner, continue to use it. But if you haven't started, then there's a lot of apps that you can download, and you can literally sit for 1 minute and just start to to listen. Use a guided meditation. Start to listen to inside your body and what's going on inside your brain as well. And that can send you those signals that you can really start to trust and understand who you are, as opposed to just this fight or flight methodology mm-hmm. that is obviously in our nature as well. It's more about having self-compassion and using the healing powers of foods to help us along the way. Yeah.
Yeah. Something you just touched on that I just want to emphasize with people, there really are a lot of guided meditations online that you can use and just, you know, listen, check out a few of them, listen to the person's voice and see if that soothes you and takes you to a good place. Because just listening to some of their voices, I know, you know, many people that I talk to say they have a hard time, you know, quieting their mind and being able to meditate. And I think to use some of these guided meditations that you can find online, and they're all free, or most of them are free anyway, are really wonderful. One came through my email this morning with Thich Nhat Hanh, which is, you know, who is a Buddhist monk and, you know, has some wonderful teachings, and his voice is so soothing. I just, you know, clicked it on to hear
absolutely.
It, and it's just like, oh, I'll come back to that later. But yeah, really nice.
I use is Insight Timer. There's a bunch of, there's one you can time your meditation. You can set it up for however long you want. There are guided meditations, a bunch of really well-known meditative practitioners and teachers. And then it also, what's kind of cool is when you finish, it comes up, there's a screen that comes up and says that how many people you've actually meditated with, and you can kind of message them. I get messages from people like, thank you for meditating with me, even if it was for like 5 minutes. So it's kind of cool. You don't have to connect with them at all if you don't want to, but it's just a good way to kind of fortify the time you spent by realizing that you connected with other people who are meditating at the same time, which can be powerful
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, also the power of meditation also helps you make those better food choices. You know, it really helps
exactly.
you have the higher picture of what your goal is. When you're prescribing personalized nutrition for your individual clients, do you have an mm-hmm. overall philosophy that you believe, like, plant-based is better, or, you know, or do you know, like paleo, or, I mean, do you have any you know, favorites of your own that you encourage?
Whenever I'm asked this question, I always resort to Anne-Marie Colvin's response. And Anne-Marie was the founder of the Natural Gourmet Institute, where I went to their chef training program, which is a great program in and of itself. But you know, that school in particular is definitely rooted in plant-based nutrition. However, it was Henry's understanding that some people's bodies might need animal protein. In fact, one of the stories that was told around the school was, I think it was Anne-Marie's husband at the time, and this was, I guess, back like in the 80s or something, where he was having his own health issues for quite some time, and she was trying to keep it solely plant-based. But finally she was like, well, maybe we should just introduce animal protein. And, you know, evidently he was like feeling depressed and lethargic, and was just, it really been struggling for quite some time. And literally as soon as they introduced animal protein into his diet, these symptoms really turned around. And so that just kind of encapsulates my own philosophy about it. I definitely do lean towards plant-based, but if the person's body, and it's kind of over the course of time, we kind of work to this point where, you know, animal protein might be the right choice, then I do head down that path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think I'm right in alignment with your belief system there, because I also, you know,
good.
I've worked with enough people to know that for some people they really feel like they need it. And for some others, they want that that freedom and flexibility. And so, you know, in not being judgmental, you know, and allowing everyone to make the choice for themselves, but having the overall concept of what is healthy and the desire to do right by the planet as well as your own health. If you keep those two things really paramount, you're going to make the right choices, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, this is one of the other things that I wanted to touch on is really about food quality and, you know, understanding where our foods come from is one thing. But then, you know, I mean, if you're buying a carrot or celery or whatever, I mean, ask the produce section manager or the farmer and themselves, like, you know, what the quality of the soil is. Because the quality of the soil really determines the amount of nutrients that's in any vegetable. And then if you're catching, if you're eating fish, for example, like, where does it come from? Know and understand those things. Ask these deeper questions of where your food comes from and what the real nutrient value may be in what you're putting in your mouth. Those are also really important deeper questions to be asking. Don't just take any particular food that you're putting in your mouth for granted.
Right, right. Yeah, it's very helpful to think about that, even if you are eating meat, to also, you know, I mean, some people roll their eyes when I say this, but to even give thanks to the animal that gave its life so that you're eating it, you know, to just think about it. I mean, it's so easy and so unconscious to be able to just go to a supermarket and buy a package of meat, and you don't even think that there was an animal there, you know. And so,
that's right.
You know, I think it's just helpful in everything that we take in that we take a moment to stop and think about where it came from and be thankful and give gratitude for that food and whatever it is that gave its life, even if it's a vegetable, for us to
eat. 100% you know? Agree. Yeah, it's a really important fact. It's that also helps in kind of this whole meditative practice as well. As you start to connect to that energy, there's a great book called Food Energetics by Steve Gagné, which kind of talks about this mostly from a vegetable perspective, but it's a really fascinating book, and it talks all about, you know, what food energy is about and what energy we can get from it and how we can connect to it, our bodies, through the foods themselves. So it's a really, really
good. So, Galen, we're just about out of time. Tell everybody how to get in touch with you if they want to learn more about Restore Food.
Sure. So my website is www.restorefood.com. Otherwise, if you want to reach out to me for any questions, you can reach me at galen@restorefood.com.
Okay. Thank you, Galen. And everybody out there, thank you so much for joining us. And I'll see you all again next week. Thank you, Galen.
All right.
Bye for now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.